The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Thanks for listening to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt podcast, bringing to you the best voices on the stories and issues that matter. Helping make it all possible is the generous partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Here's another piece I'll trust you enjoy.
Joined now by Arkansas United States Senator Tom Cotton. Good morning, Senator Cotton. How are you?
I'm good, Hugh. Hope you're well. Good morning to you and all your listeners.
I am now in many mock drafts. Arkansas receiver Treylon Burks, the 6'3", 225-pound giant, is going to the Browns in a mock draft. I assume that will make you a Browns fan, Senator?
Well, that'll be a good get for y'all, and we always love to see the Razorback players going on to play in the NFL.
We got all of Texas rooting for Cleveland now, so I'm hoping that with Baker and Miles, so I'm hoping to bring you into the fold. Senator, I have a touchy question. You've been a guest on this show regularly since 2011, before you even entered the House of Representatives. So I guess you've been on like 500 times, and you've had to talk to Dwayne every time you've called in. So I'm just wondering if there's anything you'd like to say to Dwayne, like the president said to Peter Ducey yesterday.
No, Hugh, I would reserve that only for you when I'm talking about you to Dwayne.
Do you want to clear the air about it? I mean, I don't want you to be caught on a hot mic. I want you to do so purposefully. I'm told that Army veterans have rather colorful language. Navy people are very virtuous in their speech, but then Army veterans can have an array of terms that they would use about Dwayne.
Well, sometimes I've been asked that question, I'll say that you can't expect a T-Rex to have table manners, Hugh.
Okay. Hey.
I was talking about soldiers, not about Dwayne.
Oh, well, okay, that's good, because Dwayne doesn't have table manners either. You notice what he took offense to. He took offense. Senator, let's get serious. According to a group of 10 serious people who have a chat room, Putin has established supply depots, which is the penultimate step to invasion, the last step being the establishment of field hospitals. Do you expect the invasion of Ukraine to occur soon?
Hugh, I'll put it this way. Every indicator we have suggests that Putin is building up these troops, not as a feint, not as demonstration, not as leverage, but because he plans to go for the jugular. He plans to invade Ukraine, probably all the way up to Kyiv in the middle of the country, across the Dnieper River, and take the entire Black Sea coast all the way down to Odessa, linking up with Transnistria, a breakaway section of Moldova that Russia has long supported. Maybe that won't happen, but every indicator suggests that it will happen.
What should the United States do when hostilities begin, and what should we be doing right now?
Hugh, let me take a step back, if I can, to talk to you and your audience about why I think we got here, because I think it informs what we should do.
Please.
Why has Vladimir Putin stationed 135,000 troops on Ukraine's border? What he has been saying the last 2 months is a pretext. It's red herrings. He says that he cannot tolerate Ukraine in NATO. Well, Ukraine's not in NATO. Ukraine doesn't have a plan to join NATO. No NATO leaders have said they want Ukraine in NATO. Any kind of immediate or medium-term fashion. He said he can't tolerate large-scale military exercise in Ukraine. Well, we don't have large-scale military exercise in Ukraine. It's not like what we do in our NATO allies, such as Poland. We have a few advisors there from time to time, but we have those in countries around the world. Those are all red herrings. The real reasons that Vladimir Putin has postured these troops in Ukraine is that he wants to reassemble the greater Russian empire, not just back from the Soviet Russia days, but all the way back to the Tsarist days. And there cannot be a Russian empire without Ukraine in Vladimir Putin's mind. Second, he wants a ring of non-democratic states surrounding Russia as buffers. And third, he does not want anything like democratic or representative government in Slavic lands like Ukraine or Belarus. The reason for that is he doesn't want his own people to look towards a democratic government in a place like Belarus or Ukraine and think, well, gosh, if it works there for them, it should work for us here in Russia. Those are the main reasons that Vladimir Putin is doing this. But Hugh, those have been reasons have been the case forever. Vladimir Putin has always wanted to reassemble Greater Russia. He's always wanted a buffer zone. He's always worried about democratic movements in Russia. So what is it now that has caused him to move? Well, there are some factors that are not related to the United States, like the new coalition government in Germany or the president of France's re-election campaign coming up. But at root, it's that Joe Biden has appeased Vladimir Putin for a year. He's made him think he can get away with it. First thing he did when he came into office was a no-strings-attached extension of a badly one-sided nuclear arms control treaty for Russia. Vladimir Putin's number one priority, something that Donald Trump refused to do. Then he waived sanctions on the Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline into Germany, which was Vladimir Putin's second highest foreign policy priority. He basically looked the other way when Russia either sanctioned or at least didn't object to the Colonial Pipeline hack. And then, of course, Vladimir Putin saw, like the rest of the world, the debacle in Afghanistan in August. So Joe Biden's weakness and appeasement over the last year is in no small part the reason Vladimir Putin has chosen now, not last year, not 5 years ago, or any other time, to go for the jugular. And I think the lesson from that is we need to be much tougher right now. We need to make sure that the Ukrainian army has the weapon it needs to defend itself. We should impose sanctions on the Nord Stream 2 pipeline right now. We should be very clear about the kind of sanctions that Russia would face if they invade Ukraine, cutting them off from the international banking system, sanctioning their oil and gas and their minerals and mining industries. These all have to be very clear right now, because the only thing that Vladimir Putin will respond to is strength and toughness. He will not respond to appeasement and conciliation. That's what actually has gotten us to where we are.
Now, Senator, when Donald Trump had rules of engagement in Syria and little green Russian men came over the hill, they were all killed. And American troops did that, and it did not lead to a international confrontation, because Putin simply, the blade hit steel and he withdrew. My question is, should American forces be involved in any way in responding to a Russian attack, whether it is from sea or by air or from CIA paramilitaries on the ground? If Putin rolls into Russia, do you rule anything out?
Hugh, we do not have a military alliance with Ukraine the way we do with NATO partners like Poland or the Baltic states. And at this point, I think it's too late to be deploying troops to Ukraine to try to deter Vladimir Putin. However, we need to ensure that our European partners are doing everything they can to help shore up NATO's eastern flank, just as we need to cooperate with those partners to provide as much weaponry to the Ukrainian army as we can to help protect their own territory. Now, if Vladimir Putin takes steps like trying to close the Black Sea to American naval vessels, or tries to interfere with the free flow of international air travel, that's a horse of a different color.
Well, let me stay on Ukraine for a second, though, Senator. Ukraine's only hope may be asymmetrical response. Have we given them the means of an asymmetrical response? For example, a land-to-sea cruise missile that will threaten the Russian fleet, because that inflicts costs that Vladimir Putin may be unwilling to absorb.
Hugh, I don't want to speak specifically about the kind of weapons we may have provided. There's been a lot of public reports about what we have provided and what other NATO nations have provided. I will tell you a story, though, about the time I was in Ukraine. This was in the middle of 2015. John McCain and I went to Dnipropetrovsk, as it was then called. We met with a lot of Ukrainian soldiers, in some cases volunteer militiamen, who were just back from the Eastern Front fighting the Russian troops in the Donbas region. And we met a burly battalion commander. He'd been a young lieutenant commanding a tank platoon in the last days of the Red Army. And he said to us, Mr. Senators, we do not need 100 Javelin missiles to blow up 100 Russian tanks. We only need one Javelin missile to blow up one Russian tank. His point being that Vladimir Putin was invading Ukraine then, in part because he thought he could get away with it. And when he first took casualties, it would present him with a whole new cost calculus, and it would strike fear in the heart of every one of those other tanks. So the weapons that we provide are not necessarily going to help the Ukrainian army defeat the Red Army, but it severely alters their cost-benefit calculus and hopefully will cause Vladimir Putin to back down. I mean, the ultimate result we want here is a peaceable outcome in which concessions are not granted to Russia, but rather American and Western strength deters Vladimir Putin.
Do you know, Senator Cotton, we've talked about Putin's assets and his oligarchs' assets before. This week, or last week, actually, one of our business accounts got blinked out a significant sum of money. Someone just hacked into the bank and took money. We'll get it back. I'm not worried about that. But it certainly is a message that to, you know, take banking very seriously. Should we not be doing the same thing as a deterrent for Putin right now? I mean, now, not after he invades, but right now going in and blinking out some of his money and his oligarchs' money.
Yes, Hugh. In fact, I've long argued that we should be more aggressive in trying to expose and seize the ill-gotten gains of the class of oligarchs who both benefit from and prop up Vladimir Putin's rule. We can also take steps to expose the crimes they have committed against the Russian people by looting and pilfering the Russian state.
Okay, my last question. Has anything about the Biden response been other than hapless? And that is a very intentional term. They are simply hapless. They do not appear to know what they're doing, Senator.
It's hard to think of anything, Huey. Even when they're taking the right steps now, those right steps tend to be half measures, and they're certainly much too late. You know, the time to deter Vladimir Putin was not when he added the 130,000 troop to the border of Ukraine. It was 3 months ago before he started this buildup. More to the point, it was a year ago when Joe Biden came into office acting like so many other Democrats had for 4 years, like a latter-day Jack Ryan from a Tom Clancy novel, beating their chest about standing up to Russia. But as soon as Joe Biden took office, he reverted back to his old, dovish Cold War ways. You know, isn't it telling you that the last time a Democratic president was in the White House, Vladimir Putin invaded Ukraine? Now a Democratic president is in the White House. It appears that Vladimir Putin is preparing to invade Ukraine. But for 4 years, when Donald Trump was in the White House and the Democrats were screaming, Russia, 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 surprisingly, Vladimir Putin did not invade Ukraine. That should tell you how you approach Russia and Vladimir Putin from a position of strength and deterrence. You mentioned the killing of all those Russian paramilitaries in Syria. Remember, too, that Donald Trump killed Qasem Soleimani, somewhat out of the blue. There was not a big buildup. We got a shot and we took it, as we should have. Or when Xi Jinping was eating chocolate cake at dessert at their summit in Mar-a-Lago, and Donald Trump looked at him and said, I just ordered airstrikes in Syria. That's just the kind of thing that Ronald Reagan did as well. We have to confront our adversaries from a position of strength to deter their aggression. Any kind of appeasement or conciliation simply rewards them and encourages more aggression.
Senator Cotton, thank you. I know they listen. I hope they heard, and I hope they do it. Senator Tom Cotton, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Town Hall Review. I want to talk to you for a moment about a group I've done work with for years, ADF, the Alliance Defending Freedom. You've seen how your freedom is under attack? Go to townhallreview.com to find out how you can join Alliance Defending Freedom to help ensure the opponents of freedom don't dictate your future. That's townhallreview.com. If you enjoy your podcast, take a moment, tell a friend to subscribe today.
This is Carol Platt-Lebow for townhall.com. The Supreme Court has just agreed to hear a pair of cases challenging race-based affirmative action at Harvard and the University of North Carolina. It could signal the death knell for the legal regime establishing diversity as the rationale for considering skin color in college admissions. This sort of thinking has fueled the identity politics on race and sex and sexual identity that dominate today's college campuses. Ironically, it hasn't produced what matters most for any university: diversity of thought. Any admission system should strive to ensure equal opportunity. Those surmounting extraordinary challenges should be rewarded. But it's wrong and racist to assume that race equates with disadvantage. The child of a poverty-stricken white meth addict from Appalachia is hardly more privileged than, say, Barack Obama's daughters. Chief Justice Roberts has written, "The way to stop discrimination on the basis of race is to stop discriminating on the basis of race." Now we'll see if he meant it and if the other justices agree. I'm Carol Platt-Lebow.
The Pepperdine School of Public Policy, America's unique graduate program for leaders. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.